There's just this nice big flat spot for you to put your thumb and your fingers on, and it's so sturdy, you know?
So comfy.
I have an incredibly tough year.
Hello, my name is Junjilla. Welcome to Judgeship. This episode falls within Tabaktoberfest, a month-long event during which some of us worked on our open blade skills, celebrated the stanky glory that is Moira und Wirt's Tabak Original, and let our straight razor thrill get a little bit out of hand. Today we have a full court with all the permanent judges present. With me is the man who talked me into trying tabak a year ago, for which he has my eternal gratitude, the Honorable Samage. How are you doing today?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. Just had gochujang noodles, so I'm pretty fired up.
Wonderful, wonderful. Then, we have the man who sounds like Kermit the Frog talking in a garbage disposal, the boss hog himself, Honorable Eldrum R. Can you speak?
Barely, but yes.
So, what happened to you?
My kids decided to share. We had the respiratory virus run through our house with the youngest, and because I was the one that took care of him, and he likes to still cough in my face, and doesn't have a personal bubble, I ended up getting the milder version of what he had. So this is the best I've sounded in about 3 days.
Okay, good timing. Last but not least, among the permanent judges, we have the man who sniped that vintage near wedge straight on eBay that you were just planning to buy, the Honorable Whistle Watch. How many razors are currently in the mail to you?
I think just one. It was supposed to get here days ago, but it's currently lost in Chicago USPS purgatory. So we'll see.
That's a
as is tradition.
Yeah. Indeed, indeed. Okay, so for today's episode, we have a very special guest judge. But first, a recap of this last month. Tabaktoberfest is almost over, Thanksgiving is upon us, so now as a Mage and Whistle Watch, you have participated in the festivities. How have they treated you?
Yeah, I think it's been a good month, actually. I've quite enjoyed it. I've only got the two tobacco products, though. I've just been flitting between the new...
Those are the Puck and the Cream, is that it?
No, it's the Vegan and the Tallow Formula Pucks.
Ah, got it. And?
A very big fan of the Vegan replacements, in all honesty. You know, all the boomers worrying about Metallo, I honestly think, you know, you can buy with confidence.
Good to hear. We've had similar observations last time we did the test. Okay, so Whistle Watch, how have the festivities treated you?
It's great. The month has flown by. I can't believe it's less than 1 week until November. All the products I've used have been good. The shave stick, the cream, the new soap, the old soap. I've had really no complaints.
So you've tried all four?
That's right. Yep. And, I think that's the thing you can say about, you know, those products, is that no matter which one you use, it's not going to be bad. It might not be your favorite, but I don't think you could say that it's bad, you know?
Fair enough. Samage, how is the open blade thing going for you?
Oh, I had about 3 goes with a DE Shavette, and then because it's so dangerous, I moved on to use an SE. But
yeah, I'm sorry, I dropped the ball on the shipping the WEC in time. It's still in the mail. Sorry about that. It's my bad.
It's all right. I've been enjoying tobacco with just conventional shaving implements.
Okay. So there's also something of a sister event going on with Geartober. And I think we should give a little shout out to Marky90. He has been Leroy Jenkins in Gearhead all month. Kudos.
A brave man.
A brave man, yeah. But undeterred, he's still going strong. So to today's shave and today's guest judge. He's a particular treat. We've had our fair share of sub-celebrities in the short history of this podcast, but I think this guest may be even more famous than Jeep Guy. He is the owner and operator of one of the main pillars of our wedge shaving community, and his shipping boxes with the characteristic maple leaf are cluttering all of our apartments. It is a great honor to welcome Honemeister and wedge shaving tycoon Brad Magger to the podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us on this open blade episode. Brad, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Been working all day, of course, as usual. I'm ready to not work for 45 minutes, so...
Brad, I think you are the first guest judge who is not among our dozens of listeners, so I apologize in advance for what you got yourself into, but this is an audiobook club shave. The idea is that we all have the same shave and then we talk about it. Sounds simple enough.
Sounds simple enough, yes.
Today's theme is open blades.
Sounds simple, yes.
Excellent. Today's theme is open blades, which you are a noted expert, so we're looking forward to having you. I wrote down a whole list of questions for you, but I think it's best that we throw them at you while we shave. What do you think about that?
However you guys want to go about it, I'm happy to answer.
Okay, fantastic. What is your setup today? What did you bring for us?
What did I bring? Oh, goodness. Okay, so I have probably about 1855 Wade & Butcher for barber's use. It's about 15/16 of an inch wide.
Whoa.
I just finished it for a customer. So this is my test shave on this before it goes out in the mail. I test every edge before it goes out generally. So this one happens to have been reground at some point in time in the past. So it's not quite as wedgy as it once was, but whoever did the grind job on it was probably really, really skilled because the grind is still really good on it. And in this particular situation, it was actually an heirloom that was passed down. And so it was worth the money to put into it.
That sounds fantastic. I know that some of us have been keeping our eyes open for FBU, but those are tricky to find at good prices.
Yes, they are. Yep. This guy got it for free, apparently, so that's a good price.
Yes. Exactly. And what software will you be using today?
Oh, you're going to love this one. I'm using Barbasol 1919 Brushless Cream.
Okay, so that also answers the brush question, I guess.
Is that the gold standard in testing your straights before you send them out?
It's quick and dirty, man, I tell you, and it's slick. It's slick as not. That's all I'll say.
Fantastic.
Big Ladder wins again.
Big Ladder always wins. Big Ladder always wins. Okay, do we want to do the quick gear tour before we start laddering up?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Okay, Visual Watch, what is your setup today?
Right, so I'm using the Tabac shaving cream, not the foam. I guess the foam would be more in line with what Brad is using because you don't need a brush for that. But this is the cream. I've been very impressed. I've used it a few times now, thanks to Samage for gifting this to me at some point. And then I'm using a Vald brush from Germany, a synthetic that's been on loan from maybe one of the dozen people that listen to this. I think he might be one of those listeners.
Dozens, sir. There's a plural, dozens.
He definitely is.
Dozens. Yes, dozens. And the razor is something that Brad just cleaned up and honed for me. This is a Frederick Reynolds near wedge barber's notch. It's maybe about a 7/8 and mid-1800s. Is that right, Brad?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's probably like 1860, 1865, somewhere around there.
This one has one of those very short tails. So if you didn't, you know, have Brad telling you, you could probably guess based on the short tail that it's rather old. So, very happy to be using this razor.
Fantastic. And what is, you said already, post-shave, what will you choose?
I will splash on the Tabac Eau de Cologne, and then I will use Zingari Unscented Balm.
Okay, sounds good. Eld, how about you?
All right, I've got a Weck Secto blade with a Kismet blade loaded in. This is probably one or two shaves past prime, and I just lost track of how many uses it got, so we'll see. For a brush, I've got an original Rubber Set 400, and this one is actually misstamped. So instead of the typical single three stamp, it's actually got two stamps on the ferrule, which is kind of cool. And then I am using the Tallow Tabac in the glass jar and the Tabac aftershave lotion for a post-shave.
Fantastic. Is the brush with the original knot?
Yes, it is with the original knot, and it's holding up surprisingly well. I was afraid after I put about 15, 20 uses on it that it would really start to bloom and flare out, and it still looks like it was pulled from a paper towel tube. I mean, everything is perfectly straight. There's not a ton of splay unless I push a decent amount, and then when it dries, it goes right back to cylindrical. It's pretty cool.
And Samage, how about your setup?
Well, I'm glad you left me till last because mine's complete garbage. It's a split D shavette from Portugal.
I'm sorry.
it's the Antiga Barbeira de Barreiro shavette, and I got this few years back as a present, and it was in my misguided youth that I said, "Oh, I'll shave that. That'll be cool." And yeah, it's a good implant. It just suffers from being a split D shavette. In fact, it's very harsh. You get it wrong, and you're dead on the floor. You're bleeding out. It's a very harsh razor. I think it's probably if you're totally unskilled like I am.
I've tried that razor. You've lent it to me, and again, my apologies that you don't have the wax extra blade yet in your hands. Okay, so to my setup, I will use the fourth of the remaining of the tabacs. So it's the soap stick, which is also a very good tabac product. And I'm using a Zwilling Henkel Friodur 472.5. It's a stainless steel 13/16 of an inch straight razor. And I'm using a Dogwood Handcrafts brush that I have had made exactly in the colors of Tabac Original with a Zenith unbleached knot in it. Okay, so is it time for us to ladder up?
I believe so.
I'm already lathered.
As is tradition. Let's go for it.
I was wondering if Samaj was going to beat Brad to it, or if Brad would beat Samaj, because there's not much lathering going on.
Clearly, I didn't know he was getting a head start. So,
oh, well, I wanted to ask Eld, are you auditioning to be a Jack Nicholson impersonator?
No. No, that's the last thing I want. I just want my voice back.
Ah, wait, I should ask a question of Brad, so he doesn't have to ladder. While we are laddering, he can answer. So, Brad, your honing service is like a hidden little gem at the bottom of your website. Is it more of a hobby, or is it hidden by accident?
It's kind of hidden on purpose. So I would say that honing is a labor of love, right? And so I would say that, you know, say I got 30 razors a week for honing or something, solid chance I'm making minimum wage that week. It's just not really much of a money maker. And to be perfectly honest, sometime after the first 5,000-6,000, it loses a little bit of luster too.
Yeah, I can imagine that. But I also saw that you haven't updated your prices since 2018. So that doesn't help with the minimum wage, huh?
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, I just feel like there's so many, there's other options out there. And so, like, I'm still probably the most expensive one that I can think of. But just if you want something cheaper, you can go out and find somebody else to do it, you know?
Yeah, of course.
But at the same time, like, the market doesn't really bear me to charge $40 or $50 for honing. Like, that's just not gonna work in this market, you know.
So it is a bit of a hobby.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I think I do. I continue to do it just purely to maintain reputation and to maintain, like, customers that I've had in the past that have done work for them. They know what to expect when they get an edge from me, and so I'm happy to do it again. You know what I mean? Okay. And then just kind of keeps things going along. But you won't see me, like, posting on Facebook or, like, in groups or something saying, or in an email blast saying, send me your razors for honing, you know, just because it's tough to do that, that sort of quantity. And most of the guys that have worked in this business, you know, guys from Straight Razor Designs and some places north of the border there that do honing have basically told me the same exact thing. That was their experience over the years too.
Mm. And do you still do restoration jobs?
I do. Same sort of thing. I'll be honest, like, I enjoy restoration way more than honing. But
yeah, of course.
what I will say though is that, like, the problem is that 90% of the blades that come in for restoration work are kind of just like run of the mill 5/8 full hollows, and they're thrashed up, and there's nothing really, like, fun or cool about a lot of the blades that come in for work. What I really like is when somebody sends me, you know, some, like, crazy one of a kind or super rare, super value razor that I get to work on. That's the fun stuff for me.
Does this for barbecues that you hold now in your hands fall in that category?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, those look
much more interesting.
Ah, nice. I watched those that video series that you did on YouTube on restoring razors, and I mean, wow! It really looks like a lot of manual labor. I can't imagine how much money that would cost if it wasn't a hobby.
And I've been able to kind of keep it a hobby and then kind of run the wet shaving store as the primary, you know, and that's just kind of makes much more sense from a financial aspect. And honestly, I don't even think it's sustainable. Like if you wanted to do that for a living, you know, it's just not possible.
But that's how you got started, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I can give that credit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the money that you're charging too, right? I mean, tell the people how long you have to spend honing, for example, a razor like this Frederick Reynolds.
Yeah, so, you know, it just depends on the razor. Somebody sends in something that's got a bunch of chips in it, and, like, you know, I'm not using anything mechanized. And so it just takes a long time to work through those chips. And I hate to take a razor to a really low grit stone to remove chips fast because, you know, you don't want to take more steel off than you absolutely need to. Like just the bare minimum to get to an apex on the edge, and that's what you should be doing. And so it's much easier to get there very slowly on 1,000 grit stone than to try to take it down to something lower.
How is the ladder coming on, gentlemen?
Oh, great. The vegan tobacco is super creamy. It's really good.
Yeah, I overloaded my brush, but it's ready. I mean, it's good. I'll thin it down as we go, and that'll work. So I'm ready.
Okay.
Ready.
So we start on the first pass?
Absolutely. Okay. Maximum concentration now. So don't slip the throat.
no throat slitting on the podcast, please.
Nice. I can hear somebody's audio. Somebody's got a full hollow.
I think it's my full hollow, yeah.
Yeah. Those Friadors, man, they are noisy razors.
I kind of love it. I mean, I'm not very deep into the straight razor rabbit hole, so I don't have too much experience. But this is one of my favorite razors. The sound is good. The heft is kind of good. It's not too big, not too small. It's really nice.
I had a customer back in the day who collected the 8/8 Friadors, and I've honed. Well, I basically restored and honed probably 30 of them for this guy.
Is that the Friador 14?
Yes, yes. He also collected like Palmera 14s and some other like 14s, you know, like just whatever he could find or whatever. Uh-huh. But I've sharpened and shaved with so many of those, and they are so consistent and absolutely wonderful razors. It's the only stainless razor that I enjoy. Like, it's the only one.
I have that question on my list because maybe I start with that. So 4 years ago, you published a list that now became a little bit famous. It's a list of razors that a well-rounded straight razor collection should contain.
Yes.
Do you mind if I read it and you comment on it?
Sure.
Okay, so first item on the list was a full hollow, 5/8 or 6/8 in size, either vintage US, Germany, or current production Germany.
Yes, yes. And I think that's kind of self-explanatory, right? It's what's out there. It's what you're going to find the most of. It's usually the easiest to find. It's usually the cheapest to find, and they shave well. And so at that size, you know, it's not too light. It's not too heavy. I generally push people towards trying to find a 6/8 as opposed to an 8/8 for a first razor, just because that little bit of extra weight gives you a little bit, I think it gives you a little bit like a smoother shave, just because the extra gravity assist that you get on that first pass can help a little bit. Since we always teach, you know, don't use pressure. So that's kind of where I generally start people, is like start with one like that.
Ah, nice. So then the second one is a near wedge, circa 1860 or before, 6/8 to 7/8. And then you will list some examples, Marshes and Shepherd, Greaves, Joseph Elliott, John Barber, Bangle, Packwood, etc.
Yeah. So the reason I recommend that one next is because it's just the most vastly different from the 5/8 full hollow that you can get, pretty much. just because of the fact that the steels from that period are usually a little bit softer, you may find that they feel smoother. They definitely respond to stropping better. So like when you strap a really old wedge, like it just seems to like come to life. Like, you know, whereas like a more modern razor, you strap it and it's kind of the same as it was last time. But
softer steel.
Yeah, a little bit softer steel. So it's just kind of an interesting like way to explore something that's completely different. And that's why it's number two.
Excellent. So would you count Whistlewatches Reynolds in this group?
Yeah, because it's like kind of mid 1800s. I mean, there's definitely, you know, some. I mean, there's a slew of manufacturers that would be fine, but it's mostly just kind of like the dating is really where you're kind of, in my opinion, more, you know, a wedge, which that's the only thing that existed then, and then something in that mid 1800s.
Okay. Ah, good. Thank you. And then the next on your list is a quarter hollow. 1800s, 7-8 or more, like a celebrated Wade & Butcher. So I guess this is what you hold in your hand right now.
Yeah. So
yours is a wedge, right?
The one that I'm working on for somebody here, it's been reground. So at one point it was a wedge, but it's been reground. So it's not original, you know what I mean? But the reason I did that one is like that one's all about like size. So like you want to try something big, you know what I mean? That's like that's why it's number three. Because a lot of people will find that once they do try a really large razor, 7/8 plus, that they end up preferring it. And so you won't know unless you try it. So that's a number three that I always recommend.
That's interesting. I'll have a few more questions on that once I try. We'll refer to the line of thoughts. But let's do that after the list. So the next one on your list is a modern 900s wedge, like a spike, double duck, a red imp, and so on. What about those?
I think it just gives you like that more modern steel, but like that quiet scrape the whiskers off your face. Like it's just a different experience, and so that's the reason I throw it in there. You know.
Yeah. Those wedges are stealth razors. They don't make the hollow sound. What is the next? The next one is a Swedish razor, Helgestrand.
Yeah. Again, just to experience a different type of steel. I think that, like, I generally prefer the Helgestrands over the, there's another maker. It escapes me right now. But
the other one, also Eskilstuna.
Yes, it is. You're right,
yeah.
It is.
I forget the name, but yeah, they're both from the same city, huh?
Yeah, but they're both good. I just think that, like, at the time, I'm sure the Helgestrands were probably more expensive. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then the next one on your list, Philharmonica or Palmera, Spanish razors, 7/8 or more.
Yep. And those are just those absolute ridiculously fine, thin ground Spanish razors. Like they're just really, really, really thin. And like they're almost like effortless to hone. Like you could set like a bevel on one of them puppies, and it takes like, you know, 10 strokes or something, and like it's absurd. Unless they're in really bad shape, you know what I mean? But like when they're like mint out of the box, or they're already in really good shape, like they just take an edge so fast, and they're just a pleasure to work on and sharp and shave with. Yeah.
May I ask, is that are they similar to extra hollow Tiarisa?
So no, I just think that they were just whoever was producing those, like they had it down. Like they were just masterful at their craft, basically. Like the ones that were being produced like in the mid 1900s, like I don't even know what dates they were, probably like 60s, 70s, you know what I mean? Like I don't even know, but they're just absolutely phenomenal. And like I wouldn't compare a TI razor to one of those at all, like in any way at all. In fact, the TIs, I'm not a huge fan of the modern production in the last 10 years, but the vintage TIs are great, but yeah, I would definitely not put them in the same category at all.
That's very interesting to hear. That will be also something that that one listener who borrowed you the brush whistle watch would be interested in.
Right, definitely.
So just one thing before I go on the list. I'm done with the first pass. Are we going to the second pass?
Oh yeah, I'm already there.
I'm working on it.
Okay, I'm going in for a second pass across the grain.
This is where we should remind ourselves of the old hiker saying, you know, especially on the second pass. The golden rule is don't fuck up.
Old hiker always with us on our open blade shaves, in spirit at least. Okay, and last one. Fyodor Inox, 6/8 or more.
Again, it's like the best possible stainless steel razor that has ever been made. And that's all I can say. I mean, it rounds out the experience, I think, because stainless steel does have a different feel. But if you're going to do it, that's the one to do.
What is your feeling on Ralph Faust's stainless steel razors, the modern ones?
So I haven't even used one, which is kind of embarrassing. I guess I should probably order one up from him and just to give it a shot. But just knowing my past and knowing how I pretty much am not a fan of any of the current production stainless razors coming out of Germany, I've just not really, I just never got in, never even tried it.
I see. So the other modern production German stainless would be what, Dovo? Or I don't think Böker makes them in stainless.
They may. I think they may have a couple models, but their models are like ever changing in the last few years. So they may not be in current production, but I do know that Dovo does make a stainless. And
It's not very popular.
Yeah, I'm really not a fan, but I guess I'm not a fan of a lot of the newer Dovos. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah. Just, I saw that you don't stock them also on your shop.
Yeah, I used to. I haven't really been wowed with them because I have to rehone every single one, and so I end up test shaving them, and it's just they don't wow me anymore.
Okay, well, that's a good answer. You had a customer write to you a week ago about stainless Ralph Aust. That was me.
Okay, yeah.
You just outed yourself as the stainless Aust fanatic.
No, I cannot be a fanatic. I haven't tried
it. Please, faster, acknowledge me.
I'm curious. I'm not a fanatic. Because, I mean, let's be honest. If stainless steel was as good as carbon steel, there would not be a reason to use anything else, right?
Right. Yeah, definitely.
It's really a pain that you have to be super careful with keeping your straight razors dry.
Yes.
Yeah, it's part of the deal what puts me off, maintenance.
I told you, I can send you a Fyodor.
Yeah, but it also means... Yeah.
Do those... It's kind of a dumb question, but with those stainless straights, do you not have to worry about the moisture as much? I feel like if I had one, I would still... dry it just as much.
I dry mine, but
you would have to like leave water sitting on it for like extended periods of time. I mean, it would eventually probably rust, but I mean, it's they're pretty low maintenance in terms of rust. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I can tell you that the new old stock that I bought. That is what, like 60 years old. It looks new, and none of the other straight, and no carbon steel looks new after 60 years in dry storage, right? Without an oil layer. So, I really think you would have to do it on purpose if you want to get them to rust.
I think so as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. Is that because it's stainless, even if it's vintage, the average condition that you're going to find one on in the secondary market might be better, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look on eBay, the Fyodors are always the shiniest ones, right? They just don't age as much as carbon steel razors, at least visibly. And I have never seen a new old stock blade that did not need honing. And this one here, I did try it first. I just stropped it and used it for the first shave. Like, Henkel delivered it 6 years ago, and it has been sitting around. And it was kind of okay. I mean, I then did hone it a bit, but it was honestly shave ready, which I found surprising.
Wow,
Brad, I know you've been doing straight razor work for a long, long time, and you talked about how restoration is your favorite part. Do you have a project that you did as far as a restoration that really sticks out at you for either the fact that it was like a really big challenge and it was just too much, or one that was like you turned it into a work of art that you're like, this is like, right. If I were to give an example of how good my work is, this is the razor I would show. Do you have anything that kind of sticks into your mind?
Yeah, there's two jobs that ring a bell. One of them, somebody sent me this really cool old wedge, right? Razor was actually secondary because the real important thing was the fact that he sent me a giant chunk of mammoth ivory, like still like the whole tusk. You know what I mean? Like, and he's like, I got this chunk of ivory, this mammoth, you know, fossilized mammoth ivory or whatever. And he's like, can you turn that into a handle? You know what I mean? And so, you know, my workshop stunk to high heaven as I was cutting that puppy down. But yeah, that one was a absolutely. So one of the things I'll say is like at real ivory, like even if it's old ancient mammoth ivory, is an absolute pleasure to work with. And so I can understand how, you know, 150 years ago, like they were murdering all the animals in this world. You know what I mean? It works like butter is like the best way to describe it. It sands down amazing. It buffs out amazing. It polishes amazing. I mean, it's just an extraordinary material to work with. But anyway, that was an absolutely beautiful handle. It took a long time just because I had to slab out a chunk of ivory. And the other one that I did was somebody sent me these little bits of AAA grade mother of pearl, and they were only a few inches long a piece. And so if you ever see a old vintage straight razor that has a real true mother of pearl handle, not a fake one, you know, it will actually be paneled. So there'll be like three or four panels on the scale. And the reason is that mother of pearl can't flex, right? If you try to flex it, it'll snap. And so a straight razor, in order to be functional, actually has to have an opening where the blade can rest into it and the spine is thicker than the opening, right? And so you really have to have scales that flex. And so I actually took this mother of pearl and I used a silver backing liner and I paneled out this mother of pearl across the length of the scale, just like they used to, you know, a zillion years ago when Wade and Butcher and everybody was making them like that. And that one turned out absolutely beautiful. And I got some, yeah. Very fun, but extremely time-consuming. You know what I mean?
Yeah, those both sound amazing.
Sound like Marlon Brando there for a minute.
How many more celebrities can I sound like before I get my voice back?
Kermit and Marlon Brando is quite the range.
I'll take it.
So I've stopped shaving for now. I've had a quite successful two-pass shave, and I think if I exceed that, I will do damage. So
you're not going for the third pass.
I am not going for the third pass for this razor, no.
Okay.
Do you guys find, much like I do, that a two pass straight shave is generally about even up with a three pass DE shave?
Yeah. Well, sorry, I was about to say I just generally shave for two passes anyway with a DE SE razor anyway, regardless. Maybe just some touch ups, but.
People always on, you know, the like YouTube shavers have advertised this thing that you must do a three pass shave with every safety razor you use, right? But when those same people use open blades, they always just do two. So I follow that just because I'm a mindless YouTube shaver person.
Huh. So I still feel like I get well, this is like my shave number 80 or so with a straight razor, so I'm not really experienced, but I miss more spots when I do two passes than when I do three.
And DJ, I'm in the same boat. Like, granted, I'm just now picking up an open blade, and it's been years and years since I used a straight. But I mean, I find myself needing three passes at least on my cheeks. I cannot do three passes on my neck. I look like I shaved with a cheese grater, no matter how good my lather is, how light my pressure is. But on the cheeks, I feel better, like I had better results with three passes than I do with two.
Ah, wait, I think there's a question that we need to ask. Brad, how is your beard map on the neck? Because that is the one part that I don't get in two passes. I have swirls, and so I need my three passes.
Yeah, I've got it comes up and then kind of like right underneath my jaw, it starts heading outward direction. So, and then like my cheeks go down and then they go right underneath my jawline and then it goes out as well. So it's kind of like a weird thing. So I actually go up on my neck on my first pass.
Yeah,
but I have to like be real careful as I start to near my neckline. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, yeah. jawline. But you don't have a swirl.
Not necessarily a swirl. It does go in a couple directions on the right side of my neck, but it's not too bad. So, I get tons of irritation, like just in general from any razor, but which is why I originally found straight razors to begin with. You know.
So maybe when I'm more when I've had my 100 shaves or my 1,000, I'll also get a good shave in two passes. But for now, I still need three.
Yeah, that's the weird thing with open blades is it depends a lot on the one you're using and your experience, obviously, because on one hand, two passes could not be enough because your technique isn't good enough to achieve a close shave, right? But on the other hand, if you do three, you could hurt yourself. So it's like, well, do you stop at two because you can't get close enough, or do you stop at two because you don't want to hurt yourself? You know, like, yeah.
Or you have a septic pencil ready to go when you push your limits.
There you go.
Do you use a lot of skin stretching when you use a straight? Because that's very important.
I need to around my chin. For the rest, it's kind of okay. Do you stretch everywhere?
I try to, because you know, the more that you can, the better results will be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no one's ever told me that I've overstretched or that it's looked like I've been stretching too much. So I do try to sort of overcompensate and remind myself to stretch more, even if it doesn't seem like I need it on obvious areas, you know?
Uh-huh. Do you guys also stretch with DE razors? No. Or any safety razor?
No. What I tend to do is I'm like a bird of prey. I stretch my neck out.
The funny faces. Yeah,
exactly.
true. I'll... Yeah, so in that sense, yeah, Brad, I do also stretch. I make funny faces the entire time.
Sure.
Yeah, always moving my head, my face, you know, but I physically don't use my hands to stretch the skin. We're using DESE.
Hey, Brad, old steel or modern steel?
For me, it's the old stuff. I just like the shave it gives. Like this shave today was awesome. But the edge passes. It just feels smoother. I have an incredibly tough beard, and I feel like I can get through it with less effort with the old vintage Sheffield steel.
Have you tried feathers?
They're like too sharp for me. Does that make sense? Like it's harsh. It's like harsh on the first shave with a feather. Like by the second shave, they hit the sweet spot. But when I'm opening a brand new feather on the box, like it's a little bit too much. So I think I like the smooth, like softer steel. Like feather is probably insanely hard, or you know, really really hard on the Rockwell scale or something. Whereas a old vintage straight is probably like RC58 or something.
Do you have a grind that you find that you prefer on your straights?
Yeah, generally, like you know, the heavier the grind, the better. I really like the old vintage wedges.
So I see a theme. You like the big heavy blades.
Yep. You got it.
Yeah. And your list has nothing under 5/8. Those razors are not worth you don't like them in general, or how do you feel about
like
those?
I feel like if you get that 1/5/8 as your first one, you know what I mean? Like that generally kind of takes care of that need. Like, and then like if you find out that you don't like the 8/8 like later, then you could always explore back and try to get a 4/8 or something. You know what I mean? Like but I most of the time, and this is just from talking to many, 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 many customers over, it's been 10 years. I haven't been in the business now, but people generally wander north of 5/8. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, you can see it in the prices on the secondary market. On eBay, right, you can get mint condition 4/8 for a fraction of the price that you pay for the bigger ones.
Yes. I'll say that like the biggest like challenge with the 4/8 is that number one, like it makes stropping a little more difficult. So like if you're not really good at stropping, like you can easily like flick that razor over and like nick your strop. Whereas if you got like a nice big hunk of a wide blade there, it's much easier. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. I did exactly that. I nicked my strop with a 4/8.
Yep. And then the other thing I would say is that like the shave itself, it requires more oomph from you. Like you have to like do more of the work. And so like your technique has to be spot on. Otherwise, you know, you end up with, I think, you know, you can easily nick and cut yourself, because the edges themselves theoretically are going to be the same sharpness, whether you've got a 7/8 razor or a 4/8 razor. So yeah, those are kind of the two things that I feel like, I think that they're more nimble, and they, and like, you know, for somebody who has like a bunch of facial hair and they're lining stuff up and get under their nose, et cetera, they may be useful. You know, they're trying to keep things manicured or something.
Yeah.
But for full face shavers, I think that some of the downsides of them kind of make it just not really something that you should explore unless you absolutely hate the larger blades when you try them, you know, then you could explore it.
Yeah. So that brings us to the other half of the open blade thing, the shavette. So the shavettes, I mean, the vintage ones, like the WEC, they go more in the direction of this 4/8. And the modern ones, like Feather, they go more in the direction of the bigger blades. How do you feel about shavettes?
Well, I've actually never really used any vintage shavettes before. I guess, like, when I'm out in antique shops and stuff, like, I'm always focused on the real thing. You know what I mean? Because that's what I was passionate about the whole time. So,
yeah.
When I did start using, like, modern shavettes, of course, my very first traditional shaving product was a shavette, much like, you know, a lot of people, that's their first thing, you know, because you think, oh, I want to get a straight razor or whatever. I said something about it to my wife. She got it for me for Christmas in 2008. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, and again, it was a bloodbath, you know what I mean? Because it was just the little split, you know, split holder shavette. And so, like, I feel like you have to basically master them if you want to use a half DE blade shavette. Like, there is no, they are unforgiving. They will get a fantastic shave, but you have to be impeccable in your technique.
Absolutely, yeah.
And if you're not, then you'll pay dearly.
Yeah.
We've had a guest who had the exact same origin story, Americus, with the shavette that he bought and went home and butchered his face.
I was determined, though. I made it happen. Like, it took me about a month until I could get an acceptable shave. But yeah, so nowadays I actually started, like, I prefer shavettes that take injectors. Because, and there's a couple of them out there. We've actually got one on our site that we stock that fit it really well. But the injector blades, like, they feel so much like a real straight.
And you so, like them more than the Artist Club?
I think so. You know, they're thicker. Mm-hmm. It's because they're thicker. They're like, I would say, like, you know, an Artist Club's what? You know, 2-3 times the thickness of a DE blade. And I think an injector blade is probably more like 4 times the thickness of a DE blade. I don't know. I'd have to get out the calipers. But yeah, I mean, they behave more like a real straight razor edge, and they're also not just insanely sharp like some of the Feather.
Nah, I wonder how you would like a WEC. Those are, I find them the closest to a hollow ground, but they are definitely very sharp, like scary sharp in the beginning, like this weird harshness that you only get from disposable blades.
Gotcha. Yeah.
What do you think to the Durham Duplex?
Again, like literally my experience with them was, like, you know, throw them away when I buy them in lots of straight razors. Like, I've never even tried one.
Okay.
Oh, well, yeah, that's it. I've never used one. I didn't even know people were using them.
Yeah. I mean,
so it's a safety shavette, right? It has a... It has a guard, so that makes it a little bit. It's not really an open blade.
Well, no, but I suppose it's in the, I don't know, spirit of an open blade. I mean, yeah, it does have the open blade attachment.
Yeah, it does. That's true.
Did you end up using it? Or?
No, I didn't.
You were brave enough.
Yeah.
So, are you? Can you guys buy modern blades for those? Like, I've never even looked into it. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Everready makes those blades, and then there's some agent, and I just discovered it, and they also sell duplex blades that are marketed to dog groomers.
Oh, fantastic.
Let you know how to go.
Hey, I have one more question on my list. So on this on your video series on razor operation, you bring a pitted and rusted wedge to mirror polish. And it looks like you're taking down quite a bit of material.
Yeah.
This kind of restoration, would it be possible with a hollow ground, or are pitted hollow grounds just doomed?
Yeah, if you have a pitted up hollow ground razor, like, you basically have to learn to live with the pits. Like, there's just not anything that you can really do, because, again, it depends on how deep the rust is. But you know, if it's some light surface rust, you're fine. If it's a little bit of rust, like up in the hollow where the blade's a little bit thicker, you might be okay. When you get towards the edge, it's really important, like, if you're ever out there looking and trying to buy a razor, that you avoid them if they have visible rust on them. Especially, like, I call it, like, this spider vein, like, black spider vein rust. Like, yeah, like, because that stuff is usually really deep. And sometimes you can sit there on the stones and you can hone and you can hone and you can hone. And when you're looking at the edge, you never get to clean steel. It's just like Swiss cheese. You know what I mean? And if you can't get to uniform clean steel across the whole edge, like, it's not, you know, it's not safe to use, because you'll end up catching a hair on that little spot or something, and it'll tug, and then all of a sudden the razor will jump and you're going to cut. You know what I mean? So it's just not even worth attempting to ever, you know, work on something like that, or try, you know, you have to get to clean steel is basically what it amounts to.
Yeah, I guess that also explains why all the restorations on eBay are always on the wedges.
Yeah, man. I'll be honest. Like, when I did that, when I did those videos, like, I removed a lot of steel from that blade, right? And the problem with, like, the wheels that we use that have, like, the greaseless compounds in them is that, you know, they're not a hard surface, and so they'll give, you know.
Yeah.
And so you can basically, like, ruin the original geometry of a blade by continually pressing it against a surface that's abrasive and is giving, you know what I mean? And so you can definitely mess up blades pretty easily. And the way that most of, like, the amateur restorer guys out there get around it is just by using boatloads of tape when they hone, because then, even though the sides of the blade are sticking out farther than the spine, you know, they get around it. So ideally you'd want to regrind a razor that's in really bad shape like that. But it's pretty difficult to do, and you need a lot of specialized tools, and so not a lot of guys do it, you know.
Do you have the equipment to regrind hollow ground?
I cannot regrind a hollow ground razor, no. In fact, I would, you know, you would need a wet grinder to do anything on that, something that's really, really hollow. Because there's just, like, even with a big thick wedge that if I'm regrinding one of those, like, I'm dipping that puppy in ice water, like, every 5 seconds, because I don't want to ruin the temper on it. And the problem with hollow grind is that, like, you could spend 3 seconds on a grinder with that, and you could completely ruin the temper, because there's such a tiny amount of steel there, and it will get so hot so fast that it'll just ruin it. It'll ruin it.
Okay. Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense.
I definitely do not do any hollow grinding. I don't even have the equipment. I mean, you'd really need a double wheel grinder, and you would need to be, it would need to be a wet grinder. Like, there's no two ways around it.
you went to visit Ralph Oust, right?
Yes, I did. Yep.
Did you just get to see the stuff, or did you get to use some of the equipment? Did you get to grind your own hollow ground?
I didn't try to grind. No. Okay. I basically just witnessed everything there, and it was very, very interesting and fun. You know, just to see all the equipment that he had there. I mean, his grinders are all, like, you know, 80 years old or more. And it was just really cool to see it. Very, very dirty.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, you could tell, like, he kept it as clean as was physically possible. You know what I mean? But in the
Which
end,
wasn't
I
much.
Mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think the biggest takeaway from that was, I mean, there's a lot of takeaways, but I would say one of the more interesting one was that I saw just how many razors that even him, as a guy who's probably ground, you know, tens of thousands, had to trash them while he was in grinding process. He had a milk crate sitting next to him on his grinding wheel. And I mean, it was full. So you can go too quick, you know, too far too fast on a hollow grind, like in moments. And so obviously that's something that took him a long time to master, and probably still he occasionally messes one up.
Mm-hmm.
You know that thing they say about, like, don't blink or you just might miss it for some important event in life? Yeah. It's like, don't blink or you might grind out the entire middle of your hollow razor.
Yes. That's exactly what it was like, yes.
Oh, nice. Do you visit a lot of manufacturers?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, half of the manufacturers that we stock in the store are probably people's kitchens, so...
Oh, yeah, true.
artisan shaving soaps are just small operations. Yeah, I can't really think of any. I mean, I visited Tater, the brush company in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the Boker showroom, but I'd never set anything up to you know, actually get into their factory or anything. I don't even know if they do that sort of thing. But other than that, I don't really think I've met many other manufacturers that we stock.
Well, I think Ralph Aust is one of the more interesting choices anyways.
I would agree. Plus, we had a lot in common. You know what I mean? So, you know, we were sitting there with our phones back and forth with a translator on our phones for quite a while.
Ah, he doesn't speak English.
He does some, but not a lot. So it was definitely a struggle at times. Yep.
Ah, yeah, I can see that. Do we have more questions?
Yeah, I'm a complete noob, right? If I was to invest in a straight razor, where would you suggest someone like me would look to? Would I go to eBay? Would I buy new? What size? What grind? I completely know nothing, and I feel, you know, the urge to buy. Where should I go? What should I buy?
Start with Brad's list.
Well, yeah, number one on the list. That's the way to go. Yeah, I would just go with a 5/8-6/8 full hollow. Could be modern, could be vintage. Just if you buy vintage, I probably wouldn't recommend eBay unless it just looks immaculate. You know what I mean? Like, if you can tell there's no issues with the edge, you know, no rust on it, etc., then you're kind of safe to take the leap on that one and then just send it out for honing. But a lot of times, by the time you send it out for honing and stuff, you're into it for enough where you probably could have been close to something that's already done up by somebody who's reputable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In which case you could just get something off the shelf that, you know, like a vintage restored one from just a couple guys on Reddit, you know, like that sell them. We sell them on occasion on our site. I mean, not all the time, but I think I've got a few on there right now. They're less than $100. So like, those are kind of like where I would start with. Yeah.
Okay.
Or a modern, like an Aust 5/8 or 6/8.
Yeah.
At what point would you recommend people start buying stones?
It depends on how much you take to it. Like, if you end up liking it so much that you're, you know, using it 5 days a week or something, that means that a rehoning session is every 4 months for you. And so immediately starts to be like, oh, I should probably just buy a stone. Otherwise, I'm going to be without this thing for 3 times a year and spend $100 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're using it, say, on a lazy Saturday morning, and you're getting 50 shaves a year out of it, then you're going to get 2 years out of an edge. And so that may make more sense just to send it out. Or if you just have the desire to learn, you know, or turn it into a little bit of a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
The first purchase should always be a finisher. So you're looking at like a 10,000 plus grit. I highly recommend a 12,000 grit Naniwa Superstone. They're just fantastic stones. And with just that stone and a pro-honed edge, you can basically indefinitely keep a straight razor going.
I'm happy to hear that. That's exactly what I bought.
Yeah. And so, you know, what I recommend is that when you have a stone like that in your possession, there's no reason to ever really let the edge go too far. Where the point where you where the 12 isn't enough, you know what I mean? And so what I usually tell people to do is if you've got a decent, you know, American, German, current production, etc., full hollow razor, I would recommend 20 strokes on that stone every 20 shaves. So the old 20-20. And that will keep that edge going indefinitely. You know, never allow it to really do enough damage to it where you would need a lower grit stone.
Do you need a lapping stone?
It's a good idea, but you could probably get away with multiple honings, like on a touch-up stone, without lapping again. Because if you think about it, what's happening is that the stone is actually going to be dishing a little bit in the middle as you use it a few times. And so theoretically, you're still hitting the edge. You have to think about that as like, you know, if you're laying the razor down on it, it's hard to describe without a visual aid. You know what I mean? But basically,
yeah, you're basically on the bottom of a barrel.
You got it. And so you're going to be hitting the apex, you know, every single time that you use it. If you only have one razor and one stone, you could probably get away for long periods of time without ever lapping it. In fact, it could get so dished that, you know, if you ever did lap it, you wouldn't even be hitting the apex of the razor. So it's kind of like if you have a lot of razors, it's kind of important to keep them completely dead flat, if at all possible. That way, that when you move from razor to razor to razor, and touching them up, you're going to be able to be hitting that apex every single time. Yep.
So much information. I need to bring my notepad.
Thank God that we are recording all of this.
I always say I could probably teach like a 16-week course. Like
I would totally take that.
Adrian College?
Yeah.
You also have a list of razors that you will not hone. It contains anything made in Pakistan or China. That's just all garbage.
Well, no offense to people that live in those countries, but so the problem with Pakistani steel is like it's not of high quality. They're using poor steel to begin with, and then every steel along the way makes it that much worse, basically, is what happens. Then if you good poor steels, you just can't temper and harden to an acceptable level. So, you know, it's fine for some fantasy dragon knife that you see at a flea market it never's going to get used. with these things, you have to have steel that is up to spec. And it needs to be tempered right, hardened right, and tempered right. And if it's not, I mean, it's just not going to work. And that is what happens with Pakistani steel. I mean, it's great for surgical instruments and dental tools. You know, they can make, they're probably the world's number one supplier of that stuff. But for razors, it's just not even worth the effort. I've never seen one come out of Pakistan. And I've attempted over the years, every once in a while, just to see. You know, I've actually, because we basically are like, we're stalked by like every Pakistani, Indian, and Chinese manufacturer. You know, they're constantly bugging us. And every once in a while, they'll be like, okay, we fixed everything. It's great. And then they'll send me one. And, you know, the steel is so horrible, I could take a pair of pliers and bend the razor. You know what I mean? And like, a straight razor should not bend, period. It should snap. You know what I mean? And so that's a fairly good indication that it's not good steel. Now the Chinese, better steel, but very poor grinding, right?
Ah.
And so you'll see warps, you'll see uneven grinds where the bevel is super thick in one spot and super thin in another. You'll see stabilizers that are in the way. And then on top of all that, it's not 100% guaranteed that you're going to get one that'll hold an edge. And so like for me, like, the customer satisfaction of an edge that I put on there is the number one priority. And if I can't guarantee that, why would I do the work? You know what I mean? Why would I charge somebody $28, which is, you know, whatever, for a gold dollar that's worth $5, and then they get it and they don't like it, or it doesn't shape. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's a very good answer.
And then they turn up on the forum and they're like, Brad Maggard is a fraud and a snake oil salesman, don't they? Yeah, that's what it goes from there.
I would never be able to, that's why I don't sell anything like that either, you know what I mean? Yeah. Because you just can't guarantee it, you can't stand behind it. And I think this is one of the biggest things is like the companies that do sell those types of razors, like they could be ruining somebody on straight razors for life because they, you know, this is the one time they're going to try a straight razor, right? And they get it and they shave with it and it's horrible. And so all of a sudden they never want to use a straight razor again.
Oh, not only that, but even with the big European names, they'll turn up, won't they, and say, well, it's not shave ready, you know, and they're furious about it. You'd expect it to come out the shop shave ready, wouldn't you? But
yeah,
it's even the case with big names.
Yeah, and Oust is doing a really good job putting Shave Ready stuff out, but every other manufacturer, it's hit or miss, and they're using stones that aren't flat. You know, they're using convex stones, or they're using mechanized sharpening to put a quick edge on it so that it'll pop a hair, but it doesn't really deliver a smooth shave. It really just depends on probably whoever the heck did the finishing sharpening on a razor on a given day.
Can you explain that? An edge that pops a hair but is not giving a good shave?
Yeah, so it's pretty kind of like, it's well known that, you know, you can quick and put a dirty edge on anything and it will you can pop a hair, you know what I mean? The thing is like, that doesn't necessarily mean that the edge or bevel is uniform and polished. Mm-hmm. It just means that there's something there. I mean, it could look like a big old nasty bit of steel sticking off the edge that's really sharp at the very tip, and it'll catch a hair and pop it. You know what I mean? Like, but
yeah,
you just want this. You want the smooth, uniform the entire length of the blade. Like that's the goal of these things.
It could be like saw teeth or something.
Exactly. Yeah, it'd be like, you know, say you got a really nice kitchen knife or something, and you hit it on, you know that the thing is dull, but you hit it on a sharpening steel, and you're bending all that steel in all of these different ways or whatever, and it's creating little bits of keenness along that edge. You're making it sharpen spots effectively, and so, you know, you might be able to pop a hair with a kitchen knife after a sharpening steel, but would it shave well?
Yikes. I'm shuddering at the thought.
I suppose I've got a question about Maggart as a whole, the whole business, and where do you see the actual shaving hobby in the next couple of years with high inflation and a potential for a global recession?
Yeah, so the one thing that I will say is that we are seeing the same number of new people coming in. But the problem is the returning customers are going way down. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've had the largest percentage of customers that have never ordered from us before since like 2016. And so like 67% of every order I've shipped in 2022 has been to a customer who's never shopped with us before, which is pretty crazy when you think about it. So what that's telling me is that we are still growing the market in general, but the economy is significant pressures happening right now, and people who maybe already are in the hobby just aren't spending. And so I think that that's going to continue. And us as a, let's face it, I mean, we're a discretionary income retailer, right?
Yeah.
I think that people take a look at their 401ks and they take a look at the cost of, you know, general day-to-day necessities. This is going to be the first thing that starts getting cut. And so we're going to be in a position in the next few years where lower price companies like Sterling are probably going to thrive and higher priced companies are probably going to have a rough time, because I think that's just going to be what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised. Actually, it's that way around. So you're receiving an influx of newer customers compared to the old guards, so to speak, previous customers.
I think that we've always had that though every year. You know what I mean? And so it's just now instead of shipping 44,000 orders and 22,000 of them going to existing wet shavers, we're shipping 22,000 to new people, but there's only 11,000 going to wet shavers that are already in the market. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what's I see that that's what's happening right now. So.
Yeah, I mean, the problem in this particular hobby is also that probably the old guard has dents that can last for 2-3 years. No one needs to leave the hobby just because they cut down costs.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, that's a tricky spot.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's unfortunate just because, you know, that means that it's low margin stuff that's happening, that's going out the door right now. you know, less expensive beginner kits, et cetera, et cetera. But that's just the way it is right now. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I guess on the opposite end of that scale would be the straight razor customers. How big is that part of your business?
So it goes in little spurts, but the downtrend is very apparent over, you know, in the last 8 years. There's just less people that are trying them and using them. So I always try to nudge people to give them a shot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I mean, there's been a lot of big resources that have shut down, or, you know, other retailers that were very much promoting them. And they've, you know, since hung it up, you know, and they're done. So it gets tough when there's not like somebody out there. Like, I'm just so busy all the time, like, that it's very difficult for me to be the ambassador too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just something that, again, there just has to be a buzz out there, and people need to be making content about it. Otherwise, it just will continue to die a very slow death.
Well, I guess we need another straight razor scene in a James Bond movie.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yes, which was a huge, huge bump to straight razor markets worldwide. Like, it was absolutely insane. That's basically,
yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. Dovo went to having 2-year backlogs on the wholesale ordering.
And they went from being bankrupt to surviving.
Yes. Yep.
And here I was thinking I was keeping Maggard afloat with my little restoration honing jobs.
Is that it? Did we forget anything?
Has anyone applied post shave yet?
Ah, yes. We forgot the post shave. Ah, yeah. It's like we're doing this for the first time.
Brad, what post shave did you use, or are you too manly to use a post shave?
I tell you, the protection from this Barbasol 1919 might be all that I need.
That's all, folks. If you shop at Maggard's now with code Barbasol 1919, you can
save 40 cents.
No, I was speaking of this. I was very happy to see that they just released the matching balm for that 1919 cream. So I've already told Brad. I hope that he starts to stock it, and if he does start to sell the balm, I will be the first customer.
Sure. Oh yeah, I mean, I'm pretty impressed with it, and I know everybody says big shave, but I'm telling you, man, Barbasol is a very small company.
Whoa! Listen to that.
Ah, sorry.
DJ's already working on the next razor.
No, I'm just putting away the peel.
I don't think there's many employees at Barbasol, and I think, and obviously they're based in the U.S. too. They're based
Ashland, Ohio.
So. It's actually it's kind of cool actually. Like, I talked to the president on the phone for a while, and he was talking about, you know, possibly introducing a DE, and I was like, I gave him like all my contact information. You know what I mean? Like, for every company, because I want to see him do it.
Yeah,
because obviously with a name like that, if they do put something out, you know, it'll just be good for the market in general.
So, Major, is Barbasol a thing in the UK?
No, we don't have it here.
Yeah, neither here.
It's just all Gillette. If you want to get a can foam, and then it's Palm Olive if you want a cream out of a tube.
Mm. I don't even think that you could buy it if you try to here.
Yeah, I think the only reason people know Barbasol here is from Jurassic Park, and that's literally it.
Ah, I didn't remember that there was a Barbasol in the Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's how they tried to get dinosaur DNA out, isn't it? The first one, and the Barbasol can famously rolls away in the storm. And
okay, now I have to rewatch it.
But they even released a Jurassic Park edition. I'm sure they did.
No, they did. All right, well, gentlemen, I hate to be rude, but I've got to log off and go pick up the minis. So, Brad, thank you very much for spending the time with us this afternoon. This was awesome.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, this was really super interesting to listen to you talk. And thank you for answering all our questions and for taking the time. I know that you are busy.
Yeah, no problem. I had a blast. It was fun.
Excellent.
Just before you disappear, Brad, how much of that Indian allspice cream do you still have in stock?
Indian old. I think I have a lot. I think they literally make me buy 800 tubes at a time.
I'll be sure to help you out in November.
Okay, I guess we'll see each other again in November. Thanksgiving is in a few days. Have a good month and see you soon.
Bye.
Alright, well, I'm gonna log out too again, Brad. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. DJ Samaj, I'll catch you guys later, alright?
See you.
See you later. Filed.
Take care. Better go to climb a phone shape.
You talk a lot, you know what I mean? Like, if you get me started, like, I'll keep going forever.
That was awesome. That was awesome. Yeah, yeah. This is the type of content creation that Brad needs, except with only 2 dozen listeners. That
hey,
doesn't generate a
dozen?
Lot of sales.
Super fun.
Especially since the people that listen to this podcast are all hoarders like me and DJ.
Yeah, you were in the 20-year of supply camp.
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
I think I could hit 30 years probably if I stretched it properly. That was an awesome episode. Seriously, the good breakdown of the list. That was awesome. I feel like people that listen to the guys that listen to the podcast got turned on to the MM24. And so like the thrill seekers on the sub that still, you know, partake like in this stuff might start taking the plunge into straight rate. Like, you know, like you're talking about, you get the first one. Try something.
I think you might be right, and I have to go buy all the eBay raises on my watch list before.
Yeah, we gotta hurry up and snatch everything up first.
You'll know if it's taken off and I buy one. So
I was up at 2:30 last night shopping for straight razors like an idiot.
What did you buy?
No,
I didn't buy anything. I was just browsing eBay like an animal.
Yeah. It's funny. Like there was once a time where like when I had a really nice straight razor, like I wouldn't even list it on my site because I wouldn't know what it would go for. And I would just put that sucker on eBay because there were so many people out there that were trying to find them that like sometimes I would get like absurd prices for them. And yeah. So like it's very much not like that now.
Cause and now you don't think the prices go high anymore?
No.
No, they definitely still do for certain items, but not as much probably.
No, like 5/8 run the mill kind of thing.
I mean, I can remember getting $800 for a Wade & Butcher 8/8 celebrated. You know what I mean? Like there was a time, like in 2013-14, like you could just get stupid money for them, and it's definitely passed. Now we're like, it's about 40% less than what it was. You know, they range in those.
I don't know. I still haven't understood the appeal of the big blade.
They're so nice. I don't want to be dumb and send mine across the ocean, but at the same time, like. I want you to get in your fucking hands and understand. It is so comfortable.
But like, so, I mean, I do have 5/8, 4/8, 6/8, and 13/16 hollows, and I have a 3/8 wedge also a 13/16 wedge, and I don't get this progression that bigger gets better. And
that's the thing that's weird for me too, right? So like when it comes to DE razors, I'm all for titanium because of the weight, right? Uh-huh. I don't love like stainless steel is fine, but the reduced like the middle tier that TI brings, that it's not too light like aluminum, it has just enough heft that it feels comfortable. Like the 8/8, like the Wade & Butcher, it just has the right heft. Like it feels comfortable. It glides across your face. Like, I don't know. There's something about it. And I feel like I can still get all the places on my, like, you're talking about how it's big and it's like cumbersome or whatever, like in like the nose area or whatever. Like just do two side passes and it's cleans everything. Like, I don't know. It just works. I really enjoy shaving with it. I don't know. I feel like you just got to get your hands on one before you can understand. You know, it's one of those things you just got to find the right one. And when you get there, you'll figure it out. Like it'll click.
Yeah. So the big ones, the tangs are basically over a quarter inch thick. And so like there's just this nice big flat spot for you to put your thumb and your fingers on, and
it's
everything
so
just
comfy.
Feels so sturdy. It's so sturdy, you know.
Yeah,
it's just it's definitely nice.
Brad, there's a 8 Freoder on eBay right now that I was looking at, and I don't know. I feel like I haven't seen one of those ever. Do you? I know you were saying that like the Freoder like steel is insane.
I think it's just like. I mean, it's very good steel. So like, it's the closest thing to like a the feel of a carbon, like a modern carbon steel razor. But like, the grinds are what's the best. You know, those and the Phillies and the Palmeras or whatever they're called. I mean, those are just they're all like these massive full hollows with super super thin grinds, and they're just. They're really nice.
That's the addiction for me with like the MMOC hype and the WEG hype that we all went through here in this group. There's a lot. Like I'm still trying to find a good Philly that I'm like, this is a clean Philly that is like worth picking up. But I haven't seen anything that's been like jaw dropping. You know what I mean? Like I haven't seen the one yet.
Like with those Phillies, if you ever see one where they like the bevel seems like it's wider, like really wide, like the bevel should be almost invisible on those. So that means that it's probably honed up into the belly. So like when they do double, you know, full hollow, double ground or full hollow grinding or whatever, they basically use larger wheels. And then later on, they change into really small wheels and they get up there and they create the actual hollow, right? And usually there's like a belly that runs the full length of the blade, which is just a little bit thicker.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes all the way from the shoulder, like the shoulder stabilizer up where you hold it, all the way out to the point, right? And it's usually about, you know, an eighth of an inch or so off of the edge. Sometimes it can be a little bit more or less depending on the size of the blade. And so a lot of times what you'll see is like people have had a Philly or, you know, some of these bigger razors, you know, like 7/8 or 8/8 or something. They get a chip in them because they're so dang thin. And then they'll go take them to a stone and they'll hone. And by the time they get it to the point where, you know, they got clean steel or whatever, they're into that belly. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm convinced that like when a Philly is, or, you know, any of those big 8/8 full hollows or 7/8 full hollows, like if you're honing into the belly, like they just don't have the same wow factor as when you have like that super, super fine ground thin edge.
Well, it must completely change the structural response, right?
Yeah, it does. It just changes it. I mean, yes, there's, you can still make them sharp, but it doesn't have like the characteristics that you come to recognize from those blades. Like it starts to feel like something, it's something else. You know what I mean? Or like, like a 3/4 hollow or something, not a full hollow, you know, singing blade. So
interesting. Yeah. I know you guys touched on modern stuff a little bit, but like, do you watch many of the mod, like Corette, or trying to think like the other guys that do customs, like that guy in Ukraine or whatever that does, or console, or do you watch, like, you know, care at all about them or not really because they're doing custom work and it's not like your market necessarily?
Right. It's kind of not my market. And like, sometimes I feel a lot of those razors can be, you know, form over function. Mm-hmm. And so like, I'm always trying to like grow the market, you know what I mean? And so like, it's just, they can be difficult to strap. They can be difficult to shave with. They can be difficult to hone. You're also at the mercy of just assuming that, you know, somebody who's made 50 razors or something is doing the right type of work.
Right.
You know, it's getting hardened and it's getting tempered and they're not like, because like I said, I've seen the milk crate. I've seen Aus milk crate.
Yeah.
And you're telling me that somebody who's got 4 hours into a blade and they ruin the temper and they look at it and they think to themselves, oh shit. Do you think that every single time that goes into a bin?
Yeah.
I gotcha.
See, this is what I worry about in terms of the semi-custom or custom market, is I need to trust the maker to the point where I know that if they've got 4 hours into something with all this intricate file work and da-da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da, that they're going to bin a razor if they ruin the temper. So, yeah. And Oust will do it. You know what I mean? Because I've honed some blades from custom makers and don't feel right sometimes. And I feel like that's probably has more to do, and I'm not calling out any single individual person, you know what I mean, in any possible way.
No, I absolutely get it. I was just curious. But
yeah, and that's kind of my thought on them, is that, you know, I think most people who buy something like that are buying a piece of artwork, not necessarily a functional razor. And there's nothing wrong with that, believe me. And it's entirely possible that, you know, they're perfectly fine. But there's a lot of variables and there's a lot of problems that you can introduce to a blade along the way in that manufacturing process. And so unless you're doing everything, you know, by the book and consistent, I mean, put it this way, even the fact that a lot of custom makers are making a different looking razor every single time,
It gives me
worry.
Mm. Yeah, no, I get it.
Because of the fact that there's so many things that can go wrong.
The lack of consistency leads to concern, right? Because they're not like Oust where they're throwing out the same fucking razor over and over. Right. And it has to be right. Because if someone looks at two of them and it's the same razor and they don't look the same, it doesn't fly.
Right. Now, there are some makers that, like, I would trust, like, say, a razor from Max Sprecher in Las Vegas. Like,
yeah,
he has done so many. He is, basically, he does one grind and one grind only, and that's on an 8-inch wheel. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And his lines are straight, okay? So there's nothing crazy. And I know for a fact that he is a crazy attention to detail person. So it's like, you know, you line all that stuff up and it's like, okay, you know, I would feel comfortable
there's
buying
space there. I got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same thing with, like, you know, the old Hart steel razors, right? So there was three makers in Northern Michigan. They all got trained by Tim Zawada, who is a custom knife maker. Each of them made razors for Hart Steel, which was basically like a subsidiary of Classic Shaving or something. I don't know. Somehow associated in that. And then they sold them at Classic Shaving, right? And before they changed ownerships, which we won't get into that. But those blades, they were all the same, every single one. So the profile of the blades actually got laser cut, okay? So, and then it got ground to a certain point, and then it would get hardened and tempered, and then it would go to finish grinding at each of these three grinders. And okay. each of them did so many that they knew exactly what to do every single time, right? And by the time they got to the point where they had 1,000 under their belt, you know, that's the point where I'm like, I got no issues with these guys. And it's true. Mm. They made fantastic razors. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So that's kind of my thoughts on the custom stuff. I'm not saying that you wouldn't get an amazing one, but I feel like it's more you're buying a piece of art than you are a absolutely 100% trustworthy piece of steel that's going to be perfectly functional every single one that they put out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I wonder if we could get because you know, Mr. One More Timer, right? Used to hang out in the barn.
Okay.
He and I both bought the Piggy Bank, which is Korat's like budget model. We both got them, but at different times, so from like different batches. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if, you know what I mean, if he, like, we could get them both side by side and look at it. You know what I mean? Just to.
Sure.
See,
sure.
I don't know if it would mean anything. I don't know. I'm curious because
one of the things that's frustrating is like I can make anything like shave really well. The question is like, you know, will it shave well in 10 shaves from now or not? You know what I mean? Like that's the end thing that you can never really know. So like a lot of times I'll do honing for people and there's always going to be that bit of a disclaimer. Like, you know, you're sending something to me for honing, like it's going to be sharp. Will it hold its edge or not? You know, you're sending me a 100-year-old razor and it's hard to know whether or not something has happened to that blade in the past where it got heated up and lost its temper, you know what I mean, or something like that,
which right.
I'm assuming the same thing could be true for any custom maker if they weren't very particular about their processes, you know.
But I'm
assuming some of these guys have made enough where they're probably in decent shape, you know. The things that I worry about is like when you see the new ones where they're not even getting the basics right, like just basic geometry, you know, thickness of spine versus width of blade, you know, stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
those are the types of things that get real frustrating. And it seems like it's always those makers and those razors that like somehow go viral or something, and there's like a bajillion likes on it, and
yeah,
all of a sudden, who's somebody who has absolutely no business making razors at all.
And they're everywhere.
Has a bunch of people, you know, has a bunch of custom orders. I can relate, man. Like I used to do custom scales in wood, and like there was this one day where where I was pinning a razor in after like, you know, however many hours of work of restoring the blade and then, you know, making the scales from scratch, and the scales just split. Oh. You know what I mean? Like tink tink oh. tink tink crack. And so oh. you know, and I was like, all right, that's it. I'm done with wood. I'm never doing it again.
Nope.
I don't care how much you're paying me. I don't care. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, it makes sense. Yeah.
And I've stuck to it, you know, and it's just, and to be honest, like I had originally intended on becoming a custom straight razor manufacturer. That was the whole reason behind the little leaf logo and everything. I was like, I'm going to have like a cool little logo like they used to have on a German, you know, on a German stamp or something.
That makes so much sense.
I know. And so I wanted to have that like little identifier, you know, like, oh, the fox or, you know, oh, the, you know, whatever.
That's and, awesome. But also,
so that was my original
for recognizing it.
Yeah. So, and then, and I'm not saying that I won't, but I'll be freaking retired. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's so much time that goes into it, and there's so many things that can go wrong. So, just doing a few regrinds on some vintage wedges and stuff, like, I know that it is not easy, like, to make a razor from scratch. So, you know, I'm even hesitant to do regrinds for people too, because there's just, you know, I would rather do it on a wedge that I own. You know, it's in my batch of crap waiting for work. That way, if I screw it up, it doesn't affect anybody. You know.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to stop the recording now. Bye bye.
All right. Cool. See ya.
Have a great night, guys.